Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. And get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills and online at duffysbeer.com.
This is a man that needs no introduction.
Who is this guy?
The most knowledgeable columnist in the city of Pittsburgh.
Some in our audience don't know the finer points of hockey.
He goes by only one name.
Hotter than Bond, cooler than Bullet. Shaft.
No, it's not Shaft. It's Rossi. And he's here right now on Trip Live Radio.
Rossi on a Thursday, normally a Monday, Wednesday, Friday visit here on Trip Live Radio, but big event last night in town, in case you missed it. Cubs 4, Pirates nothing. Rossi, what happened?
In case you missed it, yeah.
What'd you think?
Rob can go back to covering the Penguins, and he can read lips the way we can read lips this, Rod. That's what Sidney Crosby's going to be saying to Rob. I'm going to effing kill you.
I've not had to read lips when that's been said to me in that dressing room before.
True.
So, yeah.
What surprised you last night, Rob, of everything you saw?
Shocked is probably too strong, but I was surprised and disappointed by Gerrit Cole. I said it on the program the other day, guys. I thought he was going to be really good. I mean, I thought, if you'd have asked me, I said this to Tim as we were leaving the game or leaving the ballpark last night. The one thing I would have said is I thought Cole would go out there and figure out a way to just keep the Pirates in it. For him to look as overwhelmed as he did after that leadoff single became a stolen base, and for him to look like he lacked the composure throughout the game to do what you need your pitcher to do in that game, which is find a way to gut you through it when you need to be pretty much perfect. I was really surprised, really disappointed. I think Gerrit Cole's going to be a great pitcher in this league. But the problem the Pirates have, essentially, is the last three pitchers to knock them out were named Wainwright, Bumgarner, and Arrieta, and they don't have that guy. And if they're going to keep playing in these games where it's win or go home, they got to find that guy, and I don't know if Cole's going to become that guy in time for this particular team to win a World Series, because they're going to have some changes this year, this offseason. And they're also, you know, again, I keep mentioning this after every year, Ken, Andrew McCutchen's getting older, and they're not doing a real good job right now of figuring out how to take advantage of having that sort of player of their generation.
And McCutchen, still, I know he had two hits yesterday, but... Well, it's hard to get an RBI when nobody's on base, I suppose. But
yeah.
Didn't hit a homer.
He hit the ball hard, the line drive to right field in one of his outs, too. I don't have any fault with his performance.
I'm still waiting for that hallmark moment from him, too.
I agree, Tim. And I think, you know, there was a chance last night I was going to go hard after Andrew. But, you know, that was actually the best I've seen him look at the plate in these three games I mentioned. It is hard to get guys on base. It is hard to drive guys in when they're not on base. And I know there's a lot of people today saying, well, you know, the Pirates are just playing runs, how can you blame Cole? Here's the thing. More than any player the Pirates put on the field last night, Cole had an opportunity to control the narrative. And he did in a really negative way by not having control. He was horrendous. Based off the expectation I had for him, he was horrendous. And the Pirates as an organization looked bad with that junk in the seventh inning. And Cole didn't look good by having that much left in that moment. Because if you're pulled after five, you should have exhausted yourself at that point.
Let me walk back what I just said about McCutchen here, Rob. Because since we brought it up, remember, guys, we were talking about a few minutes ago, a better play by the shortstop, and that second single turns into a double play.
Yeah.
You know, and if we want him to be Clemente – and we want him to be Willie Stargell, then maybe he should have roped a double or knocked one out there, because maybe those.
Well, yeah, and I'll be honest too. I didn't, I don't play center field, so I don't know. But the the opening hit, Tim, I came up to you and we were talking about it, I think, in the what, between the first and second inning.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that. Did he get a bad jump on the ball? Did he, I mean, to come up two strides short of that ball to not dive, I mean, they just did not rise to the moment last night. And for a team that's been there before, that was really disappointing.
That was
really,
a nervous-looking really first inning. They looked like the team that had not played there before.
Right.
Neil Walker bouncing one to first, Rodriguez not being able to scoop it, McCutchen getting a bad jump, giving up a cheap stolen base, Harrison dropping the ball, Cole falling behind in the count. They looked like I would have expected them to look 2 years ago.
And how many pitches did he try to throw from the stretch with nobody on base?
Was it three?
I don't know. I saw it on Twitter. People were talking about it. I looked up and I was like, oh, yeah.
I counted three, and I'm looking at this and going, I've never seen that before. I mean, they looked, for lack of a better word, like a team that was hungover. I mean, it was just, it was a shocking first inning to me from that standpoint. Not that Arrieta was great. I mean, we expected Arrieta to be great. But, you know, the Cubs basically dared the Pirates with their lineup. Try to get a hit because we have a bunch of guys that might not be able to field the ball. They're all playing different positions. And the Pirates went out there and looked like the Keystone Cops in the first inning. And it was their best players. It was McCutchen. It was Cole. It was Harrison. These are guys that are, you know, going to be here for a while. It was Walker, who probably won't be here again. But all of these guys, they just looked terrible. That had to be, if you are Neil Huntington and Clint Hurdle and you go back and look at that game, you have to be sick looking at that first inning and the way their money guys performed in a money moment.
Rob Rossi, our guest here on Trib Live Radio. Back to the junk in the seventh inning, as you call it, Rob. Didn't it work? Didn't it spark and rattle Arrieta a little bit for a moment, open a window for them?
It did, but I mean, it reeked of a team that was just desperate at that point. And I just, you know, and also I didn't like the way McCutchen said, you know, we're going to go down fighting, literally. How about go down winning? Seriously, that's been your whole premise, right? You don't go after guys as retaliation because it's about winning, right? That's always been – am I wrong, guy? Hasn't that been their mentality?
Yeah, but I mean,
the
they were a
years?
Desperate team. Desperate times call for desperate measures.
Yeah.
I have no issue with it at all, going all the way back to them not getting their ounce of flesh for the Zhang Ogong thing. I mean, this is going to be a rivalry. You know, and it wasn't just the Gong thing. You can argue whether it was dirty or not. It was some of the comments made by Madden and some of their players the day after. And whether they admit it or not, that still was festering.
Chicago Cubs in that series in Pittsburgh flat out punked the Pirates, and you saw it on display last night.
Yeah.
That's where this all started. They let the Cubs establish that they were the alpha males in this dynamic.
Well, yeah, but you know what? They went to Chicago and took two out of three off them.
Yeah.
But then that was
all null and void after what Arrieta did.
Well, it was,
game.
But I'm not. I don't think you can carry over the PNC Park series the last night and not even acknowledge that they went in there and kicked their ass.
Well,
Arrieta beat them on Sunday night, but the first two games they toughed it out and beat them.
Yeah, well,
you know,
but Arrieta was the one going last night, and I don't know. To me,
all the other stuff is ancillary. This is about the best pitcher in baseball right now facing one of the best pitchers in baseball, and the best pitcher pitched the way he has, and the other one wasn't even close. It was one of his worst outings. That's as simple as that.
But that's my point. That's my point. And the bottom line here is this: if you look at that Pirates team, 1-25. They're probably better than the Cubs. But here's the Pirates' problem. They are posers. They are pretenders. They talked all of spring training about this was the year they take the next step, how last year they didn't win the division because they had a bad April. What do? They come out of a bad April. And they're in the same position again. And if you're going to be in a one-game playoff, what you need is not the best 25-man roster. You need the best top-end guys. And their top-end guys do not match up. They do not match up at the number one pitcher. They do not match up in the middle of the order. And they do not match up at the manager position compared to the top-end guys. And if they're going to keep playing in this game, then they need to get better in some areas because depth does not matter in one playoff game.
So do they? Can they? I, I don't think they do. I think, unfortunately, this is where it stops. I think it's 3 years just like the 90s were, and you know, it's time to reevaluate, and hopefully they're not as far away as they were back in 1993.
Well, here's the difference, guys. I think the Pirates are where the Penguins were in 2012, and they need to learn that mistake. Remember, everybody here points to 2013, made the flame out against Boston, but the Penguins in 2012 had a great team that flamed out against Philadelphia that year. The Penguins had like the third best record in hockey that year, and they were embarrassed. And what Ray Shero should have done, and I'm saying this with hindsight, was say, I'm picking two of the three, Crosby, Malkin, or Letang, and I'm moving the other guy, and I'm going to start to rebuild around a nucleus that's still pretty good. And that's what Neil Huntington has to do now. He has to identify who's the guys he's sticking with among Marte, McCutchen, Polanco, and Cole, and then he has to evaluate who's the guy that I can move to start building around the other guys, because they have an opportunity here to, even if they take a step back next year, set it up for another 3 or 4 year run. But they have to be very smart this offseason. They cannot try to keep this thing together just because they've been in it 3 years in a row. This is where you have to be a bit bold, because you're right, Tim. The window with this group, I think, has closed, but that doesn't mean it can't. Another window can't open very quickly.
Right. They have 3 years of McCutchen left. They have 4 years of Cole if they want to ride them out. Liriano for, you know, through 2 more years. So that's pretty good at the top end. I guess the question becomes, what about Walker? What about Pedro?
Well, I wonder if the question becomes, what about Marte or what about Polanco? And I mentioned this on the show in the summer, guys. I think that's becoming a luxury. And if you can go out and identify one of those guys to move to get a piece that you lack, and that piece might be a number one guy, then you have to think about that. You really have to think about that. Because
a number one pitcher.
Or a middle of the order bat. Something where you have the presence where you don't have right now. You know, I think the biggest problem coming back for the Pirates is, who's their middle of the order bat? They have won 98 to 88 games the past 2 years with no presence in the number four spot.
Well, they had a 27 home run guy that can't bat in the fourth spot.
Yeah, got to bat him seventh, so he's comfortable.
But that's what I'm saying. You need somebody you can put behind McCutchen. And
well,
I understand Gong had a great, you know, was really encouraging in that spot. But I'm talking about a guy that does what Pedro Alvarez does, who can do it in the number four spot, who's comfortable with it.
Well, we do this every year at the end of a season.
The Cubs have that element.
You look at the guys they're going to lose, and you wonder how they're going to replace them. I think you're right. It's so hard to predict what happens next year. Maybe the Cubs have an injury-riddled season next year like the Cardinals did. Maybe Huntington pulls a couple of more moves off that keeps these guys as a team that wins 95 games again. Yeah, it's really hard to, because I sat here last October and thought their pitching rotation was going to be crap this year, and it turned out to be very good, and they put it together. So it's hard to fit. And maybe some of these changes, maybe Walker and Alvarez are gone, maybe Melanson, maybe the guys that replace them are the guys that push them over the top, that make them better.
You're right. That might be the case. But look, I have a lot of faith in Neil Huntington. I think he builds I think he's built a real good franchise here, but they need to be resigned to this fact. If they're going to keep being in that game, they're going to need, I know this is unfair, but baseball's not fair. If they're going to keep pitching in that game, Gerrit Cole, quicker than maybe should even be fairly expected, is going to have to become a guy that can go out there and, even if he's not as good as Arrieta, not give the game away early. In the last 2 years, the guy they've put on the mound in that game has given the game away early, and it's been over. They need to go find a guy who's not going to do that if Gerrit Cole isn't going to be that guy soon.
Rossi, they of all the parts in this game, like of the bench players that got in, the maneuvering in the lineup, more was focused on the beginning of the game with the Sean Rodriguez start. Did it have any impact to you? What did you think of Hurdle's decision there?
I liked it. I didn't have a problem with it because I actually thought Hurdle was saying, I know a lot of people thought he was managing not to lose. I thought it was his way of saying, I think I'm going to have to win a 2-1 baseball game here and I think I can because of my pitcher. And I'm going to make sure that my pitcher knows that we're going to get to every ball that's hit to him. And I liked the confidence he showed that way. I liked it. And people think it was conservative, but I think it was boldly conservative. You can be that. But The problem is we never got to see it play out because I don't even know how they were going to approach the hitting aspect of it. When once they went down 1-0, the whole game plan changed. I know that sounds like, well, it was only one run, but one run in that game was a big deal.
That's like we four really against most pitchers.
We don't know how the lineup would have worked.
Hmm. With Arrieta pitching, that's like being down 3 or 4-0. It really is.
It is. I mean, look, again, I understand I'm being hard on Gerrit Cole, and I think Gerrit Cole's going to be great, but you can't give up that first run in the first inning, especially before there's an out.
Right.
It changed the whole game.
I expected this game to be either like a 2-1 game, and either he matched them for a while and then finally, the Cubs break through and the Pirates can't score, or the opposite. They match each other for a while and the Pirates get ahead and then the Cubs can't catch up. The Pirate bullpen shuts them down late. But I never expected them to, especially after the home run in the third. I never thought it'd be 3-0 after three innings.
Yeah. Rossi, good stuff, my friend.
It was over before it started.
I blame
Michael Keaton, guys. He shouldn't have referenced 92 in that video montage. Yeah. That was just tempting fate. Why bring that up?
Write a check and drop the puck. See you later, Rob.
All right, boys. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Rob Rossi here on Trib Live Radio. He was tough on Cole today in his column. Fair or unfair, that's for you to decide. And we had Chris email. He listens to us from Korea. He was pretty upset by Rossi's column. He says, not looking for the next Skip Bayless or the ESPN flavor of the month to crap on my day. I've got enough crap in my life. I feel the most recent Rossi column served nothing but to anger local sports fans. To put all the blame on Cole is a travesty. Not sure how the upstairs, downstairs policies work there, but I know blah, blah, blah. Parents, he goes on and talks about Trib values, but I mean, I don't
think Rossi's. Values.
Yeah, I don't think that's really applicable here. I mean, Rossi's just, he was hard on the pitcher. I mean,
I got a lot of that over the last couple hours here. It's, starting at about 8:30 or whenever they'd given up their first run, 8:45. Well, you don't have to be so hard on the team.
Oh,
What do you want me to do?
It kills me. When I put out positive things, I'm like, you're such a homer. And then when I put out negative things, it's like some lady called me a Debbie Downer last night. I'm like,
oh, God.
I'm pointing things out. What the hell do you want me to do? You can't win.
Like I said to one guy, listen, if they get a run off of Arrieta, I will positive all over this keyboard. All right? But get a run off of Arrieta first.
Well, I tweeted when Marte ran that one out that Arrieta had a cover. The next day, when he hit, I forget which hit that was, I think it was Harrison. I said he should have stepped on his Achilles when he had a chance at first base last inning. And some guy said, typical Yinzer reaction from someone that's supposed to be a professional. I tweeted him back. I said, I'm proud to be a typical Yinzer.
Should have slid into the back of his ankle and gone all Marquise Pouncey on him.
And then asked him if it was plantar fasciitis that was bothering him.
That's right. Slid into him. I don't know if Marte knows enough English to make that happen, but slid into him and just look in the dugout and start pointing at his foot. It's plantar fasciitis.
Speaking of the Marte at bat, Jim in Virginia emails about that. He says, Arrieta was on the ropes in the sixth. Yeah, Marte hit a double play, but it wasn't a three-hopper. He hit a rocket. StatCast had it at 109 miles an hour. Unfortunately, it was hit right up the short. Is that true or false? I mean, does Marte deserve criticism for that at bat? Do you buy the Gary Sheffield, he's got to get the ball in the air there?
Yeah, you can buy that. But if you get nothing but breaking balls that are going down, how do you hit that ball in the air? You want to sit there, and maybe it would have been better to strike out in hindsight, but then you'd be screaming, oh, you got to at least put that ball in play and get a run home. Nah, I don't know what you do. When a guy is pitching as well as he is, it's easy to say you got to get that ball in the air. If everything he's throwing is breaking away from you or down, how do you hit that ball in the air? Have you ever batted in a baseball game of a competitor?
I haven't, but these guys are pros.
Well,
I don't know.
Well,
Gary Sheffield's saying you can do it. I'm taking him at his word that there's an approach you can have there to not hit into a double play. I mean, if you know where a guy's pitching you, I'm assuming you should be able to adjust accordingly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Now, in the next inning, Walker did strike out.
If it was so easy to adjust accordingly to this guy, someone in the last 18 games would have beaten him other than the Phillies, who needed a no-hitter to do it. One loss in 18 games, and that's how you beat Arrieta. You throw a no-hitter at him. That's the only way anybody's beaten him in his last 18 wins.
What'd you guys think of Neil last night, Neil Walker? 0-for-3. He had the bad strikeout in the seventh, a couple curveballs in the dirt. He looked frustrated beyond belief.
He was pressing, that's for sure. He was pressing. I think he knew the circumstances, and I think he was trying to give himself a moment, if nothing else, and he was pressing. He was trying to extend his stay here.
Well, let's hear from him now. I'd love to hear what he's saying, and he's got 1 year left on his deal. What'd you say, Tim? I mean, he made $8 million this year. You're thinking somebody estimated $10 million next year?
Again, that same website, which apparently Major League Baseball teams use as a barometer in predicting what their arbitration values will be, he's projected to make $10.7 million.
Would you pay it for one more year of the Pittsburgh kid? Here's Neil Walker.
Neil, was a thought going through your head at all that you're in the on-deck circle? This might be your last chance to get up there in a Pirate uniform.
I'm going to be lying if I told you no. There's no telling. I mean, this is all I know. But this tonight is just too fresh at this point, and any kind of evaluate here as we get out of here and go home and kind of assess the year individually and as a team. I was going through my head a little bit.
Will you remember it more for the 3 years you got here then, if this is your last time, or remember it more for not being able to advance beyond the NLD?
No. I mean, the 3 years we've done some really good things around here. The group of guys that are here, it's invaluable, and it's experiences that you can't describe. And you know, the players that you play with, the environments that you play with, the ups, the downs, the 7 months plus of baseball that you put together over the course of a season, those are the things that you're going to remember. And obviously tonight's things, but you got to move on.
For Red Sox, Yankees, Dodgers, Cubs dollars, I think he's worth 10.7 to play second base. For Pirates dollars, probably not. The issue then becomes, though, what do you do to bridge the gap until you can put Harrison back at second full-time, until Jung Ho is ready to come back and play third? And, of course, you are then, by that point, also assuming that Jung Ho is going to come back and play third and hit as effectively as he was hitting before he suffered this injury.
Right, which is not a sure thing.
Big assumption.
Alan Hansen would be the internal option. They've talked about this year, 22-year-old middle infielder. Maybe he could come up and play for a couple months and see how he does, almost like a Daniel Sprong tryout sort of thing. And maybe that's your dollars better spent somewhere else than that $10 million to Neil. That's a good question. Then again, you had a bad start this year, and if everybody's screaming about you got to win the division, you can't just give up the first 2 months and say, let's experiment with stuff.
And
to some extent, though, to just say that to say we have to get off to a better start, and then because they don't, to act like that was a major, a failure that could have been prevented. The Cardinals were 15-17 in September. There's no team, even a team that wins 100 games, if you play 6 months, at some point you're not going to play your best baseball. You can't play great every month. Theirs happened to be at the beginning. To me, it's more about the games that they lost to the Reds and the Brewers in their own division against stinky teams. I don't know what the
Cardinals... And that Cardinals series, those 3-1 run games.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's the best team in baseball, and you took all three of them to extra innings. Okay, you lost them, and yeah, you'd love to have that back, but what were the Cardinals and Cubs against the Brewers and Reds? I don't know, but I'll bet they beat them up. Mm. And that's the killer. That's why, if you want to win a division or whatever, that's more frustrating to me than having a month where they just didn't hit in April. They did not hit in April. As a team, the bats didn't start going until early May.
I really want to see, when they break camp, what they decide to do with these two, maybe three, depending on how you look at it, open spots in the rotation. AJ's retiring. They probably won't sign J-Hap. So there's two. Is that class?
No, when you say they probably won't sign J-Hap, why do you say that?
Because I just don't think that's the way they think. They don't try to keep a veteran pitcher.
They
did with Liriano. They didn't do it with Volquez, did they?
They didn't, but this guy has had success here that he couldn't have on a couple other teams. I would think J-Hap wants to stay here, and he wants to keep this role that he's on. I would think they have a pretty good inside track to want to convince him to stay here, maybe for some less money.
Does he want to stay here, or does he just want to go wherever he can make the most money? Because it won't be here.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you think the Pirates are the only team that's going to try to pay for him?
No, but I mean, I think he's willing to listen. It's not like he's Russell Martin and he's going to Chicago and Toronto and, oh, yeah, I'll give me your best offer. Maybe I'll consider it. I mean, I certainly wouldn't say it's out. I'd say 50-50 on half.
I've heard him asked about it a couple of times, and none of it was what I would call
his exact response.
Very
was,
I have nothing negative to say about my time here. Yeah, it was very weak.
I have nothing negative to say about my time here. It doesn't sound to me like, boy, do I want to stay.
You don't sweat much for a fat girl.
I have nothing negative to say about my time here. It does not indicate to me he really wants to stay.
Okay.
I think he wants to go to the highest bidder, and if he does, and it's not the Pirates, then that then becomes incumbent on them to make an honest decision about Tyler Glasnow out of Bradenton and Jameson Taillon out of Bradenton or Kingham or whoever the healthy ones are. If those are their best pitchers, then go with them. My guess is there will be another Edison Volquez type, another reclamation project type that will be...
Which it's hard to mock them for because Searidge is such a miracle worker.
They'd be good at it, so that's what I'm saying. Is my guess is whoever that guy is one. And then Glasnow or Taillon is two. And then it becomes, is Charlie Morton better than whoever the next rookie is as the five?
He's making $8 million, so he's going to be better than whoever the next guy is.
Unless they can find someone that they can that really needs a pitcher.
Yeah, and get him off your hands. True. Yeah.
All right, listen to these numbers. Cardinals against Cincinnati and Milwaukee, 25-13. Cubs against Cincinnati and Milwaukee, 27-11. The Pirates had a losing record against every team in the division.
Right. Reds lost 13-19 to the Cubs. Crushed Pittsburgh. It's a good point. They got some, like, I wasn't even aware. I was looking at some of the guys coming back next year. Michael Morse is still under contract next year. I mean, he's making $8 million. I don't know what chunk of it the Pirates are paying, but is he your first baseman next year? What are you going to do with Michael Morse?
What little I've seen of him, he came up with a hit last night. I mean, I think you could do worse. I think he could be Garrett Jones.
Yeah, I guess he could.
Then maybe they try to find a lefty to platoon him and make that a straight platoon at first base.
I mean, Morse has hit 30 home runs at least once in his career. I mean, he used to be a pretty good cleanup hitter. It doesn't seem like the cleanup hitter answer for you or an everyday guy now, but at least he's done it a little bit. So, because I think Rossi is right. When he hit on, they need a middle-of-the-order bat. They do. They need protection for Andrew.
And what's Morse making?
$8
million. $8 million. So, you know, I guess if you wanted to, since Pedro is slated to make that much in arbitration roughly, you could have him make eight. You could have Morse make eight. And then you got $16 million as your first baseman with a straight platoon.
It's frustrating because we've seen that platoon before, and it didn't seem to work with Garrett Jones and the Ishikawa types, you know. And then they traded for what's-his-name from the Mets. And nobody has seemed to take off over there. But until Josh Bell's ready, I guess it's not a bad plan until you get the next wave going. So that's probably what they'll do. Which is not much in the offseason.
If he's ever ready.
So you're going to keep a guy that's going to make $8 million in arbitration to be a straight platoon that can't field and you didn't want to play him in a wild card at home.
But they did play him.
Well, they didn't want to start him.
They did want to, no. I don't know. But if Walker's gone, it makes it a little easier to keep Pedro around.
They were 64-22 against the rest of baseball.
Wow.
42 games above 500.
3-1 against everybody out of their division, pretty much.
SportsTalkAtTripWeb.com.
I mean, it's unbelievable that they were 11-1 against the Dodgers and Mets, the other two division winners. Lost one game to those two teams.
SoCal Lewis says, great season overall. I think Cole should have been pulled earlier in the game, guys. He did not have it. Great season, but they were too pumped up, perhaps. Watson is my new favorite Pirate. And like I've said earlier, I would keep Neil Walker. Interesting.
All right, so Cole came up to hit down 3-0 in the third inning.
And struck out.
Right, because Arrieta struck out the side in the third inning. So he's down 3-0 in the bottom of the third.
They had already pinch hit for Rodriguez right before him.
Right, that's when Pedro took his first tack. So, yes, I suppose you could have pinch hit for him then, but after that, he gave up one run. You know,
he gave you one scoreless and then the home run to Fowler. Fowler is an interesting guy, huh? I mean, leadoff hitter with some power that you don't think of as like a killer, but he's got speed. He's a pretty good player.
So by lose thinking then, the Pirates lose 3-0 as opposed to 4-0.
Well, if they work Arrieta, I suppose, harder the third than striking out in order. Maybe he's got a little point there.
I think, you know.
Well, Harrison, McCutchen, and Marte went down 1-2-3 in the fourth.
Well.
He didn't start to wobble.
But Travis Snyder would have got you a single there to lead off.
We've got a sprinkling can fighting a forest fire here. This guy's, this guy's unbeatable and has been from everybody he has faced for 4 months.
Okay, Ken, so then you lose your leadoff single in the sixth when Arrieta was starting to wobble. Snyder come up and hit
you
the
third.
You
needed to clone Travis Snyder.
Yes, and that is the answer to most things
story
in baseball.
Of the season. Just get story of their bad April by cutting him.
Get as many Travis Snyders as humanly possible. I think that's what most general managers are thinking.
I'd pay him $10 million.
That's all Ken's really been thinking about this morning is if he comes back.
Dan emails the show. Good run by the Pirates. What happened to the bunts, though, and the aggressive baseball?
You know, McCutchen gets a two-out single in the first. They manufactured a run in part by stealing a base in the top of the inning. There's a place you got to try to run right there. Then if you get a hit, you're up. They weren't aggressive even, as I mentioned before. With Snyder leading off with a single, they don't pinch hit for him, or pinch run for him. With Keon Broxton on the bench, I guess they were saving him as a defensive outfield replacement.
And even though Marte had a bad at-bat after McCutchen got on, it was, what, three pitches?
Struck out. I don't remember.
All right, struck out, so it was at least three pitches. Fowler went on pitch two, correct?
Yeah, he was gone.
Pitch two. So McCutchen could have gone.
Also, Dan says, do you guys think the Pirates are any worse with Harrison at second if Neil Walker is traded? That's a good question. Walker hadn't done much in the playoffs. Doesn't mean he hasn't done anything.
0-for-23 or something like that?
I think Walker's more solid in the field at second than Harrison.
He's better at turning a double play. He's good with his range to the outfield. And I don't know, but as far as his range left to right, maybe Harrison's better there.
Ed in Denver, PA. Pirates must sign Hap, guys. I don't care about Alvarez or Walker. Tired of watching them K in big games. This season began its decline when Gung was injured. They let another team bully them with no response. They took it up the tailpipe again.
Hold on there. Hold on. That's not accurate. They won 8 road games in a row after Gung got hurt, including 2 out of 3 in Chicago against the team that he's saying punked them. Now, I'll agree. I come in here as angry that Friday as anything. I'm the one that said they came to town, they drank their beer, they took their women, and they left laughing. But they responded by winning 8 in a row, including 2 in L.A. when Greinke and Kershaw pitched against them, 8 road games in a row after that injury, and then 2 in Chicago as well. So that's completely inaccurate.
If Gung is their cleanup hitter yesterday, is that a much different-looking lineup?
No, Arrieta still shuts them out.
Here's a question.
Probably.
Okay, now think about this. All right, let's say Gung went on the same sort of season he was having, right? Okay, let's say his numbers were, for the most part, the same. Yeah, you know, let's say he had the rest of the year was similar to his all the way through July, whatever it was, 24th, 25th, whenever he went down. What is the lineup yesterday if he's bending over backwards that much for defense with Gerrit Cole on the mound against Jake Arrieta? Does Gung even play?
The thing about Gung is his numbers were so much better after the All-Star game. I mean, he had a good year, but I mean, especially his power numbers and his extra base hits.
But you know what I'm saying? Now, we wouldn't know then, I would imagine, if Harrison would have been as hot as he was because maybe his playing time would have been diminished because Gung would have still been in there. But how does then Clint Hurdle look at it? If he looked at it to the point that Sean Rodriguez has to play first base.
I think he's got to play third. I think Gung's got to be your third baseman because of his offense, and that's his best defensive position. He's pretty good over there. So your decision then is, do you put Harrison in at second or in right field instead of Polanco and or Neil Walker? And right. I think and if he had hit the way he had this past month, which, as you say, we probably wouldn't have known, I'm putting him in one of those two spots. If he's still kind of the post-injury mulling around Josh Harrison, then I'm playing Polanco and Walker.
Coming up, we will hear from Clint Hurdle. He was asked about whether he needs a cleanup hitter after the game, a number 4 hitter. Joe Maddon also speaking, whether we want to hear him or fans want to hear him. Probably not, but maybe a quick clip. And Sean Rodriguez talks about taking out a water cooler. That all coming up on the Trib Live Radio Morning Show with Ken Laird, Tim Benz, and Guy Junker, Josh Taylor, along at noon. This is Trib Live Radio. We're brought to you by Duffy's Beer on Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER and at duffysbeer.com.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. And get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills and online at duffysbeer.com.
Invisible Fence Brand has helped over 2 million pets enjoy more freedom in the yard so owners can relax, knowing their pets won't run away or get into trouble. Guaranteed. Our Boundary Plus yard systems give pets up to 30% more yard space and even have a patented safety feature that leaves no room for escape. We provide expert installation plus four-step professional pet training. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
Duffy's Beer presents the morning show on Trib Live Radio featuring Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and Tim Benz. 294 Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com.
The Trib Live Radio Triple Threat.
He wants three. You know that's a trip, triple.
Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and now Tim Benz right here on Trib Live Radio.
According to reports, Randy Edsall has been fired by Maryland. So you got that going for you.
Maybe they'll shake hands with Penn State this year before the game.
That's true, Ken. I mean, with the death of baseball here in Pittsburgh, that means we can start focusing on other things more, like hockey starting tonight and college football. And, of course, the NBA, which I know Guy is very happy about. I mean, this is a league we should be paying attention to. When you've got a coach and a player fighting over the player's ex-wife with Derek Fisher and Matt Barnes. That was a great story. Did you read about that?
I'm sure Guy read all about that.
Derek Fisher got into a fight with Matt Barnes because
Who's Matt Barnes?
Matt Barnes is a player. Derek Fisher
is a player.
He used to be a player and is now a coach. The coach is nailing the player's ex, and the player showed up. Derek Fisher was a day late getting to Nick's training camp because he had flight problems. He shows up with scratches on his face, and apparently that's because of the fight that took place between these two. Meanwhile, you got Caron Butler writing a tell-all book, which goes into graphic detail about that Washington Wizard gun incident in the locker room, where one guy showed up with, I think it was Gilbert Arenas, showed up with four guns, and Javaris Crittenden only showed up with one, but his was loaded and apparently cocked and aimed at the end. So that little incident that got those two suspended for the rest of the year was a lot closer to being really, really bad than what people thought. And Butler, like I said, people shot on his stoop on a daily basis, just sat there while everybody else ran away and tried to talk Crittenden off the ledge and said, I've seen worse than this before. Now that's a league we need to follow. That's a league we need to pay attention to.
Fortunately, we're going to be deep in these leagues, whether we want to or not, or at least these stories surrounding these leagues. Because baseball season's about over around here.
Or we can go through the cocaine trials of the National Hockey League. We could do that, too.
That's true. Penguins will start tonight in Dallas. So you get that. I didn't watch any of the hockey last night, although I guess Bettman was on hand, and Bettman was being Bettman last night. Bettman also saying that maybe Lemieux and Burkle might keep the team after all, right?
Yeah, do we have that cut? Why don't we play that? This is Bettman. He was saying this to Fox News, or Fox Business News, or something like that.
They're looking at their options. They may decide to keep it. They may decide to sell it.
So that's an option to keep it?
Oh, yeah. There are a number of this is a sale that looks to the future in terms of what's best for the franchise, for Mario, for Ron. In the final analysis, they're going to do what's right for the franchise. And it's a great franchise and a great sports town.
And I think we all knew that that was a possibility, but I think they were trying to get more dollars out of just the team itself before they had to include the land rights. Or maybe they thought they could come up with a bigger deal as a package together, or they could net more if they sold them separately, but just the value of the team doesn't seem to be what they thought it was. The actual team without the land rights.
Hmm. Well, this may be a bargaining ploy from them, right, to say we might keep the team. I mean, if you're going to you always want to have that option, or they maybe have to.
Well, sure, it's like selling a house. You want a motivated seller.
It's like Pedro Alvarez. Might not be any takers out there. You might want to say, hey, maybe we'll keep him. Maybe we'll play him in the second inning tonight.
Boy,
to boost his value.
Melanson's interesting, boy. I tell you that. Melanson is interesting.
I actually think Melanson's gone. I don't even think there's any chance they'll entertain keeping him.
You burn through closers like NFL teams burn through running backs. I could see this, unfortunately, being the last for Melanson, and he'll try to replicate this somewhere else.
Of the four, of the big four free agents, well, three of them are hitting arbitration, so they're not free agents at all, but between Hap, Neil Walker, Pedro Alvarez, and Mark Melanson, Walker the most assured to be gone, and Melanson too?
You want me to rank them?
Yeah, rank them in order of... Now, you guys, that quote from you had from Jay Happ is pretty eye-opening, that he's probably not going to be here, too.
I think Happ is gone. I think they got what they were looking for out of Happ. I think that Melanson will be traded because his value is very high. I somehow think that one of the two of Alvarez and Walker will be back because I don't think they're going to do anything splashy at first base unless they do what we just outlined, which is keep Morse and try to get a lefty platoon. It could be one of those two. Maybe the compromise is coming from Neil to play first base. But then what are you doing to your power numbers at first?
If they haven't approached him yet about that, he said they haven't, right?
You put a gun to my head, Ken, I think all four are gone.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, three of the four. I think Pedro will be back. Because I don't think they'll find any good value for him, so they'll just sit on him.
Do you think Pedro will be back, guy?
I do.
Wow, they just benched him for the wild card game, and he can't play defense anywhere.
I mean, we're talking about not having a power hitter anyway. They have one that managed to hit 27 home runs, even coming out in the sixth inning of games that he started and not starting a lot. I think you try to get what you get. You know, you're never going to get the value for him that you need. I think he's more valuable on the team than he is just giving him away. So extend giving him away as long as possible. Either let him walk at the end of next year or at the trade deadline next year, get the best you can for him.
If you combined Morse's numbers and Alvarez's numbers, and what would be an average productive year? Let's say, would Pedro have 27 home runs?
27. Morse's best year was 31, but he only did that once.
What did he have this year? 10?
I don't even know if he got that. He had...
Let's say if he played every day in a straight platoon, could he get 10 home runs, Michael Morse?
Yeah, he could.
If you got...
This year he hit 275 with one homer. Oh, it was in Pittsburgh. He had four homers and he had five homers this year.
Five. All right. So if he plays a little bit, give him 10. All right. If you got 37 home runs from your first baseman and the first baseman bats 250 and drives in.
Yeah, but Pedro won't hit 27, beating part time at bats.
He had a lot of games, Ken, where he came out in the sixth or seventh inning. A lot of games.
I suppose.
I'm trying to do this from a general manager's point of view. What am I willing to pay for a first baseman to have it add up to $16 million?
True. And again, I don't know what they're paying Morse of the $8 million. I think Miami picked up some of that. Florida picked up cash. They picked up a lot of it. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, Pedro had 491 plate appearances this year. That's a lot. 2 years ago, he hit 614.
You know how I am with the Pirates. I always say this about the Pirates is I understand their cost issues. I understand the money concerns that they have. What was that, four of his five home runs are versus right-handed pitching as well, so the platoon, maybe the platoon doesn't work out as well as I'm envisioning. But at any rate.
And if he leaves you a free agency, you do get a draft pick for him. So
for me, it's always been going back to Littlefield, okay, Bonifay. It's always been not so much anger over letting guys go because of cost. It's how do you adequately replace them? And Huntington's done a good job of that. I'm just wondering how often can you pump that well?
Good question. Here, the guys that are surely gone, Burnett and Ramirez retire. Bastardo, Soria, and Blanton are all free agents. They're not going to sign any of those guys, right? I wouldn't think. Sean Rodriguez is a free agent, made $2 million this year. Other arbitration guys are Chris Stewart in year three, Ishikawa and Snyder. They have control of those guys if they want to keep them. But I don't know what they'll pay, you know, or what they'll earn. Second year of arbitration guys, Vance Worley, Tony Watson, who made only 175 this year, and Jared Hughes.
If they deal Melanson, I could see them trying to work something out with Soria.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
And have him be the eighth inning guy for Watson or vice versa.
Yep, that's a good call there.
I could see that happening because they would be paying less for Soria than what they would be paying, you would think, for Melanson.
I guess so, but Soria is a pretty named commodity. He is,
but you know, while Melanson's value has gone through the roof, I think you know Soria's value has come down.
They can't make every decision. You know, they just had their best. Last night was the largest crowd ever. I mean, the attendance this year went through the roof. They can't make every decision based on 2 cents. You know, are you going to pay a Melanson $10 million a year? I think the most, as much as everybody sentimentally likes Neil Walker, I think Tim had the best point about him earlier in the summer when the thing about him is you don't want to be overpaying him at the end of this contract. You know, if Neil Walker would sign for 2 years, whatever money he wanted, I would do that deal. Hmm. But if he wants 4 years, I think that's where a team like this will be so handicapped if it's overpaying for a guy once he's past his prime and then you're forced to keep him because you can't afford to cut him and pay him. You know.
Yeah, Neil Walker, well, let's see, just to go back to the point about Soria, Josh says $7.54 million for Soria is what he's getting.
That's what he's making this year for the Tigers?
Oh, and Melanson made 5.4. So, Melanson made 5.4. He's making 7. So, I could see that working out if they could do – I don't know what number they could get him at, though. You don't want to pay him 10 and wave goodbye to Melanson when you could keep him on –
No, that'd be dumb.
If they could drive his number down and make him an eighth-inning guy and have Watson be the closer, I could see that happening. And as far as what do they have left with on Jay Hay? Three more years?
With who?
Jay Hay.
Oh, Harrison, yeah, he's signed – He's making $5 million next year, and I think, yeah, 3 more years with him.
3 and 2 or 2 option years? Boy, that's an investment in him. You know, I think they thought he would be the second baseman. I mean, obviously, part of that move was made in mind that Neil Walker was not going to be here. And you got to do something with him because he's under contract, and you brought Jung Ho here. And I think there's still I hope there's something there with Jung Ho after the injury.
True. Harrison signed, I guess, through 2020, 2 years after McCutchen right now. He's one of your longest-term guys. On the team.
With the options, yeah.
Keep those team options, yeah.
Well, you know, as nice of a sentimental moment as it was when Gong came out in a wheelchair last night, I'm looking at him in a wheelchair and thinking, and you have to wonder, could his career have ended? At least as we saw it blossoming. Is he going to be that effective ever again? When you have doctors telling you that his leg looked like it was in a car wreck, not an athletic accident, you have to wonder.
Here's what Hurdle said about the cleanup hitter. When asked yesterday, this was post-game, and Gung was that for a portion of the season. So maybe he's talking about him. Let's hear what Hurdle said.
Well, you know, it's a good point, and you got to look at the pitchers you're facing. Is a traditional number four hitter going to make a difference? The guy we saw last year, the guy we saw this year, gets fours out. I think we're trying to continue to grow our own. We look outside. You want to go get a four hitter on the market. I don't know how cost-effective that is, the position we're in right now. I think we'll analyze a lot of things in the offseason to see where we can improve and get better. Everybody'd like to have an anchor in the middle of the lineup in these type of games, so I agree with you there. We do the best we can with what we got and where we are.
What was that?
That was a little bit of a blame the GM, or you know, somebody gave him the opportunity to question the personnel there. He didn't totally go for it, but he didn't deny it either.
Well, I'm sorry. You know what? Forget all of that stuff. Forget the money. Forget what he just said. You got a guy that led the league in home runs 2 years ago and hit 27 this year in a part-time role, and he can't bat fourth. You have a cleanup hitter, but he can't stand the pressure of batting in that spot in the lineup. So don't blame Hurdle and don't blame Huntington. Blame Pedro Alvarez.
Right. Number 2 overall pick.
Ridiculous.
Now you could try next year just to stuff him in there again and hope.
Is he finally going to wake up and get it now? I doubt it.
I mean, maybe he's getting a little bit better. As you said yourself, he got better against lefties some this year. You know, the position switch is over, so he wouldn't have to worry about that as much. He could just be focusing more on his plate approach. I don't know. I mean, might be worth another shot for a month or so. You look at the Blue Jays, though, who went out and got Troy Tulowitzki. You're talking about middle-of-the-order guys. I don't know where he's been hitting for them, but, man, you would love to have that.
They also got Josh Donaldson, you know.
Yeah.
I know that was a trade, but they've got to be ready to replace. If they want to continue to be a contender and not go into another 20-year tailspin, it's not so much about holding on to everybody. They don't have to do that. They don't have to make the mistake that the Steelers made at the end of the Steel Curtain and just hold on to everybody for sentimentality and having them end as a pirate. You don't have to do that, but you just got to replace guys
that, you know, where it works out for you. You get an accurate representation of what you had the previous season by bringing in someone new. They managed to do it at catcher. They've managed to do it at various pitching positions, but I'm dubious of them saying goodbye to so much offense to start next season and not be able to properly replace it.
Email sportstalk@tribweb.com. Ken Guy and Tim. Jason in the Berg says, I think the Pirates should have beaned Arrieta after Cervelli got hit, guys. At that point of the game, it was still early in the contest. Then after Harrison got hit, at that point, the Pirates were defeated, and hitting him looked stupid and jag-off. Made the Pirates look bad as an organization and looked sore loserish to me.
All right, well, Cervelli got hit in the bottom of the fifth. Arrieta came back up again in the seventh.
He didn't bat again until he got hit.
He didn't bat again until he got hit. So what's he talking about?
Yeah, he couldn't have hit him earlier. It's his first at bat after Cervelli got hit.
When else did he want to get hit?
That's his first at bat after both guys got hit.
What did he want him to do?
Why would you throw at him and is at bat before that? He hadn't hit anybody yet.
Should, like, Gerrit Cole or whoever was pitching by that point, Bastardo, thrown at him in the dugout?
Good point, Jason. I can't defend you on that one. Scott says, they had Cole penciled in to start. Somehow Jeff Locke showed up on the mound last night. At least his results did. Cubs scoring first was huge from the way they deployed their lineup going offense first. Cole didn't have his best stuff, and he lost his composure, too. That was more alarming to me. Did you see that? I didn't really see Cole losing his composure so much.
Well, when he pitched from the stretch with nobody on base.
Yeah. But as far as, like, Rossi said,
like,
he
lost
his cool in the scrum.
What's the other thing you said, too, Tim, about he didn't want the one baseball?
No, Josh brought that up.
Oh,
he
Josh brought it
angrily
up.
Rolled the ball away, kind of pissily rolled the ball away. He was pissed off that it didn't feel right, and he had his Spalding moments on the mound.
That's him, though. You know, that's the way he pitches. He's always out there with that glare.
No, he is. And part of that you're right about, Ken. I do think that people apply that narrative to when he has good games versus bad games. When he has good games, he's a bulldog and he's tenacious. When he has bad games, he's petulant and he's a baby.
Yeah.
You know, and people kind of take that attitude. Like, I'm watching right now this reaction to the Schwarber home run or the Dexter Fowler.
Of course
Fowler
you're
going to
be pissed by that. Like,
you know,
geez.
People do tend to do that. They will, depending on the result, talk about Gerrit Cole's mound presence based on win or loss, based on the result only.
Well, let's listen in to Sean Rodriguez, who was out of the game and then got further removed from the game.
He's that versatile, Ken. He can get thrown out twice before the seventh inning stretch.
Is that a Pirates record?
It's a Pirates record. First guy in playoff history to be thrown out twice before the seventh inning stretch.
Free agent to be
without batting.
What's his agent think when this is the last vision of his client going four rounds with the cooler?
He's
going
to fight Ronda Rousey.
that's what I'm thinking
if I'm an agent.
Somebody said the cooler's been inked to sign to fight Pacquiao on November 9th as his next dummy opponent.
Speaking of Rousey, I got a great tweet from somebody who said that your ultimate dream girl is Ronda Rousey's face on Travis Snyder's body.
Oh, now come on. That's low. Here is Serpico, free agent to be, Sean Rodriguez.
Sean, what was their plan going in as far as when Pedro came? Was it always going to be that Pedro was going to come in for the first offensive at bat, or is this the situation in the game because you guys were down 3-0?
I'm sure at that point, Clint basically just figured he wanted to give Drew, who's got a big bat, you know, 3 at bats as opposed to just maybe one.
So there wasn't a set, like, we were definitely going to come out for the first at bat. It was situation of the game.
Yeah, I would think it was more that, but I guess it's something you're going to have to ask Clint.
Sean, take us through the field after the Watson hit. What happened that set you off that much?
I got grabbed by the neck by Ross. I mean, I don't... Yeah, definitely what I did afterwards is obviously wrong in the dugout, but I was pretty heated.